This week on AgriTalk, we have evaluated current conditions, speculated about what the recovery might look like, talked about managing supplies for the packing industry, about getting workers back to work across the economy, and we've talked about what more the federal government could or should do. Now, let's tie up some loose ends and wrap it up with a free-for-all.
Live from a six-foot distance from sanity via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday free-for-all. Panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and Pam Johnson. And right after the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. I'm Hanson Hughes, Davis Magazine. Now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Davis Michelson, it is. Yeah, I am. I am absolutely fired up today. I put an extra scoop of coffee in the coffee maker. Got it a little bolder than what it normally is.
I'm hooked on this yogurt thing, man. I found this yogurt in little glass jars.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to get a hanky and wipe off my face from actually licking the inside of the jar. I'm not sure they would recommend that, but it's called Wee. I believe it's
called
German.
What?
Wee. German? Maybe Japanese. Oh. I'm not sure.
We are not we. French.
We're in America, because we're Americans.
We're in America.
But they make a darn fine yogurt, and I got to tell you, I feel
good.
On top of the world right now. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Awesome. Awesome. Yes. Well, you know, I'm not sure if Folgers is American or not either, but I put an extra scoop in, and I feel great.
Attaboy. Attaboy. You sound like you look great, too. Like, it's helping.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Man,
does it feel like sentiments are shifting, Chip? Is it just us?
It's not sentiment that is shifting. Okay. It's numbers. It's facts. It's...
What? That's boring. I mean, that doesn't make me happy.
Well, but that is what is shifting the sentiment. It's not based on wishful thinking. There are facts behind the idea that things are starting to improve. You know, we just got and we'll talk about this more in a little bit, but we just got a couple hours ago, 2.5 hours ago, the worst jobs data that before COVID, you could draw up a jobs report and say, make it as bad as you could possibly imagine it ever being,
and it wouldn't
be as bad. and then double it, and that's kind of what we got.
Yeah.
And the reaction has been, well, at least we beat expectations.
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So we'll talk.
You can't
more
trust
about
math.
That.
Yeah, you can't trust
Matt.
Sure.
We'll talk more about that with the free-for-all when we get things going. I'm sure we've got a lot of news to get to. Let's get to it.
Well, let's hit it. As part of the Phase 1 trade agreement, U.S. and Chinese trade officials met via teleconference yesterday. Trade Rep Bob Lighthizer and Secretary of Treasury Steven Mnuchin were optimistic after discussing the matter with Chinese Vice Premier Liu He, saying in a statement, quote, both sides agreed that good progress is being made on creating the governmental infrastructures necessary to make the agreement a success. They also agreed that in spite of the current global health emergency, both countries fully expect to meet their obligations under the agreement in a timely manner. Chip, this after President Trump threatened to kill the pact if China did not live up to their end of the bargain. And this meeting was part of the agreement in which they said every 6 months we're going to get together and just talk it out a little bit. And so here they are. Seems like it went well.
Yeah, and do the evaluation. Well, I'm sure that it went well, except for, in this case, the facts, because they are running behind. We talked about it with John Newton yesterday. Mm-hmm. In the first quarter, they were showing us one number. I think he said $5 billion, and John says, you know what? When you take everything into account, it's closer to $3 billion are their actual purchases of agricultural products. So we've got some work to do on this front. We'll talk more about it on the show today.
Well, Chip, those April employment numbers reported unemployment at a record 14.5%, with payrolls dropping $20.5 million as coronavirus stifled economic activity. This after unemployment reached a 50-year low in February of 3.5%. What a difference a couple of months makes, Chip.
Unbelievable. Like I said, imagine the worst possible outcome and then double it, and that's basically right. what we got. But the total unemployment came in about 1.5 million less than what the average okay. trade guess was, and that's why they're saying that it was better than expectations. And the stock market has responded yes. positively. We're up 335 points in the Dow right now. Crazy.
Boom. Temperatures in the northern plains dove overnight, with Dickinson, North Dakota, tapping 19 degrees Fahrenheit. The Arctic blast is set to blanket much of the Midwest between now and Tuesday, and crop watchers expect some degree of crop damage, although World Weather Inc. believes the damage to crops will be minimal and result in just a few spots needing to be replanted. Chip, this
tell
is
me
important.
You left your pepper. Yes. Tell me you left your pepper plants inside.
I did. They're safe.
Good.
They'll be just fine.
Good. Okay.
The first
right.
shipment of U.S. crude to China set sail late in April and is expected to arrive in China later this month. The cargo of Alaskan crude is the first send-off to China since December, setting the stage for a gradual increase of shipments through the summer months. Meanwhile, Gas Buddy analysts say U.S. gasoline prices are showing signs they've placed a bottom, as some refiners have already switched to summer blends, despite an EPA waiver allowing companies to push the switch to blends backward. Yeah. Let's see. 24 senators told President Trump the EPA should deny requests from governors to waive biofuel blending Good. Mandates, fearing it would, quote, cause further harm to the U.S. economy and especially vulnerable rural economies. And one more yeah. thing quickly, as some states forge a soft reopening, there's been little businesses that have opened or the amount of time citizens spend at their respective workplaces. While consumer spending has risen a bit in those states, oh. the gains have not markedly outpaced spending in states still under more restrictive lockdown. Chip.
Yeah. It seems that even in the states where there's a cautious tone in the states that yes. they have decided to go ahead and open up, maybe the governor is saying, go ahead, guys, get this thing opened up. But the business owners are saying, you know what, we're going to go slow. We're going to find our way, the best way to open this thing up. So
right on.
Believe it or not, those shop owners are actually showing some common sense in all of this.
Imagine
Maybe we
that.
Should have trusted them from the beginning. All right,
About
thank
time.
You, Davis. Yeah, let's bring in Jennifer Shike, the editor of Farm Journal's Pork. Jennifer, how you doing today?
Doing good. How are you?
Good. Hey, it seems to me like we are seeing some signs of improvement in the slaughter situation for hogs. Is that right?
Yes, we are. You know, we're starting to see a bit of a turnaround. We had a 37,000 higher hogs yesterday go to market than a week ago. And so I think that's positive. I mean, it's moving in the right direction. We're still down about a third from a year ago, but we've got some optimism out there with strong exports, and buying demand was up. So I hope we're going in the right direction and we'll stay that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And we continue to get some good news on the packing plants. I haven't heard if they're going to try to have a kill on Saturday or a big kill on Saturday in Waterloo, but we're definitely moving in that direction, aren't we?
Yeah, several are opening up actually today and starting back, and some on Monday. And so it's good to see more of those opening up. Every hog we get through counts.
Yes, absolutely. I actually saw a pot belly on the road yesterday, so that was a good sign. Thank you, Jennifer. That is Jennifer Shike, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. We got the free-for-all coming up next on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by ClaraFly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Thank you so much for getting to the end of the week with us. And like I said at the start of the show, we have covered a lot of ground this week. We've evaluated the kind of conditions that we are living in right now. We've tried to speculate on what it might look like in the recovery phase and how we get there. We've talked about the federal assistance, not only for agriculture, but for the economy in general, and how we can get some momentum behind the stimulus that has been put out there. We've talked about relief for the slaughterhouses. We've still got some loose ends that we need to tie up, and we are going to do that today with the free-for-all. Let's start with Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. How you doing, Sean?
Hey, Chip. I'm doing fantastic. It's great to be back. The weeks just fly by when the news cycle is this busy, and it's great to get a chance to discuss them here every week.
You know, that is true, but I was talking with Big Apple Joe Stackler at before the show started, and we were talking about how fast this week it felt like this week went, but April felt like it was 500 days long. Explain that.
Well, I don't. You know what? I'm just glad to see some people out in the field. It's great to have that kind of transition. Like, you know, we go through the kind of whole winter and conference season and all that kind of stuff, and it's great to get outdoors and see people putting seed in the ground.
Yes, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. It's a good sign that things are getting better. Pam Johnson, Iowa farmer, past president of the National Corn Growers Association, past president of Maize Hall. Pam, how are you this morning?
I'm really good, Chip, and I think I'm ending this week much better news and feeling a little more optimistic about Jennifer's report on the pork, but maybe that we've seen the worst there, and then also that I had these great worries about phase one was in peril, and now with the talks yesterday, it looks like to me that there's hope. So I'm feeling really good.
Good. Awesome. That's great to hear. Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer. Jim, it's good to talk with you again this morning. How you doing?
Good to be here. The stock market's up, Chip, because I think the unemployment rate was lower than some of the bad news bears investment houses at 17% to 19%.
Yeah, exactly. Davis and I were talking about it at the start of the show, basically said, you know, if you could have imagined what this report was going to be, just, you know, create the worst possible scenario, double it, and it was better than that. We lost 20.5 million jobs. Our unemployment rate is 14.7%. And like you said, Jim, we got the Dow the last time I looked. We were up about 350 points. And it feels like the market and the sentiment has been encouraged by this jobs report, right, Jim?
Well, it has, but again, we've got a long battle ahead, Chip, in the next few months because of this very contagious, you know, disease. And I know we'll probably get into this area, but in the meat side, I don't like that gag order that the Nebraska governor put hours before rumors of COVID-19 prevalence at Nebraska City, where they're no longer reporting COVID-19 at meat processors.
Yeah, I don't know what Pam, did you see anything on the reason why Ricketts did that?
No, and you have to have transparency, right, for trust to build.
Yeah.
Well, his reason was for the sake of privacy, which, sorry, that one doesn't fly.
It's
very unfortunate.
Homes too. Well, you know, what about nursing homes? Are they private or not?
Well, they've been protecting they've been trying to protect the privacy of those infected in the state of Iowa, haven't they, Pam?
Yep, and I don't like that either. I mean, I think the more information you know, the better decisions you can make as a person in evaluating if your own family is safe or not and where to go.
Yep, okay. All right. Hey, Ermacher, Gregerson, Anderson, somebody out in Nebraska, give us a holler and let us know what you think about what Ricketts is doing with the not announcing the number of COVID cases from those places. We'd love to get your input there. It's 855-482-5524, or send us a tweet. Just include hashtag AgriTalk in the message. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on the on that right now. We can come back to it. But I think maybe the most the biggest news of the day, Jim, is it going to be that USDA has lifted the pay cap on the CFAP program payments?
Well, Sonny Perdue said in an interview earlier this week that, yes, it is going to be increased. Sources tell us, Chip, that it'll probably be doubled from the levels that Senator John Hoeven leaked earlier about the program. So, you know, that would be very good news to a number of usual agricultural participants, and much more logical than you know what they were going to announce.
Okay, it's doubling it, but you know what the you double the 125 per commodity, go to 250 per entity on that commodity. You know there's still going to be, it's still not enough, right, Pam? That's still going to be the consensus.
Yeah, it's not enough to make us whole, and we've been saying that all along, and so has Sonny Perdue. And I think there was also a tweet out by the president that, you know, this makes farmers whole. Well, it helps us get by, but it doesn't make anybody whole.
Yeah, if you're running a feed yard in Nebraska or Colorado, you know, 20,000 head, I don't care if it's, you know, 125 per commodity or 250 per commodity, it does not make up for the losses that we are seeing right now in the livestock sector. I'm not saying it should make them totally whole, but I just think the numbers are out of whack based on the losses that are out there.
And okay, even if you just brought back a son or daughter from college and put up a hog building and you've got 2,400 finishing barns and you got no place to go with those pigs right now and you got to move them, that doesn't help you either. So it hurts the small people. It hurts the bigger people. It hurts everybody.
Absolutely. Absolutely it does.
Well, this will be an issue, Chip, if Congress gets involved in the phase four or CARES 2 package, that they could mandate, no cap on these payments, but it's going to take a while.
Well, I didn't know if I wanted to go to that phase four that's going to be coming from Congress or to another potential package from USDA first on this. But either way, there's going to be another package, and part of it's going to be specific for agriculture, right, Jim?
I think so. Oh, yes. It will get involved in spreading it to more of the industry, et cetera. But it's coming. I just don't know whether it'll be this month or in June.
John Newton from AFBF, the chief economist there. I know you know John. Well, I think everybody knows John. Yesterday when he was on the show, he was expressing some confidence that the CCC funding, that we've got a shot of getting it back to, or getting it up to $67.5 billion.
I hope he's right. I think it should be, but I think the level that will be a compromise could be that $50 billion area that Senator Hoeven and Sonny Perdue wanted initially, and the Democrats fought it. So I think there's your barometers from 50 to the higher level, Chip.
Okay.
Go ahead, Chip.
No, you go.
I was going to say, this whole Packer situation this week, there's the cap thing, but I actually think one of the more interesting pieces is what happens with the president's announcement that he's instructed the DOJ to look into possible Packer collusion, what the profits are. Have they been talking to each other?
Well, the antitrust laws, yeah.
Yeah. That's another, for me, that's really interesting to see where it goes. We saw the USDA investigation is really, it's taken them longer to figure out that than who shot JFK. But the reality is that I'm not really sure that this goes anywhere. I'm a little bit skeptical. It seems like it's a really hard case to prove. It's easy to say it's the market at work, supply and demand. I'm not sure this goes anywhere.
Collusion is never easy to prove unless you've got the tapes and the videotape, and you can sit back in the chair and say, roll the tape, we've got all the proof. If you're doing it based off of market conditions and by actions here or actions there, you can always find a way to explain why a market did something that it did. And, oh, that segment of the industry did that at that time because, you know, there's all kinds of reasons. But I'm telling you, live cattle futures pushed to the upside pretty quickly when President Trump said, you know what, we're going to have the DOJ take a look at the antitrust laws on the packing industry. Now, what else happened at that time is something that I want to talk about in the next segment, and that is that there was a proposal out there on a way to relieve the pressure on the bottleneck in the cattle processing segment, and that is a cattle set-aside program. Let's talk about that next.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beege, I take a look at this bean market 2 days in a row, right?
Yeah, big move. Nice gains yesterday and strong follow through today, Chip. We talked about the technical levels yesterday, pushing above the 10 and 20-day moving averages. Now we're kind of trying to push above the 40-day moving average. And also last week's highs and the high from 2 weeks ago. So key technical level here. If we can push above that, I would suspect that we'll see even more technical-based buying and push us even higher into the end of the weekend. If those levels hold, then we're probably likely to back off just a little bit, at least into the close.
Gotcha. Okay. It's helping out the corn market. What about wheat? Not so much there.
Right. A little bit of a struggle there. I think the big question in the wheat market is how low will temperatures get this weekend across the SRW areas, at least northern SRW areas, and will there be an impact on the crop there? Limited buying on that front so far, and it just seems like at the moment we can't get all three of those markets to participate actively in any given day.
Right, right. Okay. Some strength in the nearby live cattle futures this morning.
Yes, really strong gains. And the June contract, that's being led by that cash strength and the surge in cash prices we saw this week. We're up to about the levels where the cash market traded last week now in June cattle. So still well below the cash market, but made some big strides this week.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And then when we take a look at the hogs, we've still got some pressure there. Great job this week, Brian. Appreciate all you do. Have a good weekend. That is
too,
Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Let the proven performance of Prosaro fungicide maximize your grain quality, yield, and profit this season.
I'm surprised that we don't play that disclaimer twice on Fridays in the morning.
I always think it's directed to me.
Yeah, it is. It's directed to all of us. No question about it. Okay, so did you see what I did there at the end of the last segment when we were talking about proving collusion? I gave you the cattle futures shot higher after President Trump said, I'm going to have the DOJ take a look at what's going on in the packing industry. Or was it the proposal for a cattle set-aside that forced live cattle futures to rally? What I did right there was I just brought some uncertainty into the minds of the jurors that would be hearing this case. And unless you're 100% sure, you can't prove it. So that's how that stuff works. And when we get, if we would ever get to a jury trial on something like this, the confusion will be abundant. I don't think there's any question. So Jim, Sean, who wants to talk about the cattle set aside first? Because I don't know. I'm not sure I know who had the story first.
Well, it's been a really, really interesting debate behind the scenes. And I've learned a lot from Jim. The one time I think where I actually had a scoop on him before he did, I got to rub it in.
There you go. He at least brought it up, Jim, and said, hey, what are you hearing, right?
But did you have the plan itself?
No. We did not.
I think we're getting into technicalities here. If we got to a trial, it would be
true. Bottom line, I do want to ask you, Sean, did the Canadian program, in 2004, did that include cow-calf?
It was mainly, oh man.
No.
If I remember right, it was mainly focused on the feed yard. And the idea was if they helped the feed yards, it would filter down and there would be like a long tail process to help the cow calf. So that was where the focus was at the feed yard level, if I remember right.
Well, I just want to give a shout out to the Beef Alliance because at least they're recommending something. And I love when groups try to help each other.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Mary Sokup, the managing director for the Beef Alliance, was on the show yesterday morning in the final segment. If you have not heard that yet, she provided great detail of what they are proposing, how it would work. Basically, what it is once you've got fat cattle that are getting close to market weight or are at market weight and don't have a place to go, you could voluntarily sign up for this cattle set-aside program. It would pay, right now the proposal is $2.90 per head per day to put those cattle on a maintenance ration for 75 days. There would be a committee that would determine how many cattle are pulled out of the set-aside in that 75-day period and put through the slaughter process, but only once we get, I think the number was like 85%. Once we get back to like 85%, you know what? I shouldn't say that because I don't remember that number specifically. Once enough of the processing gets back up, they would start to pull those cattle out of there. It's a temporary proposal. And Jim, like you said, I don't know if it's the right answer, but it's a proposal with action in it. And I think it's getting everybody thinking about, hey, would this work or not? Pam, it seems like that's the way these groups are supposed to work.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know enough about the program to really comment like Sean and Jim do, but it only makes sense. You know, you look at the situation where you're in now and what are the possible solutions to get out of it.
Right. Right,
you know, exactly. We talk lots about, you know, when the whole NAFTA negotiation was going on, we talked lots about how, you know, integrated beef chain and Canadian and U.S. Groups working together. This is an example where I know that happened, where, you know, there was some phone calls made to the Canadian Cattlemen's Association asking, you know, how did this work? Was it successful? Yeah. What were the pitfalls? What was the response? Are you doing it again now? And I think that's good collaboration going both ways across that border. This week in Canada, we did see approval for a set-aside program that will happen, same sort of parameters. It's a little bit underfunded compared to what the industry was looking for, but it's a way to get to the other side. Now, you mentioned cow-calf producers. In Canada, they're, you know, like Western Stockyards Association is an example. They're not necessarily for it because they're worried about how does this impact placements in the fall? Does it push too many fat cattle into the fall,
right?
And we have that backlog. But the reality is that until we get packer capacity back up to a more a level we'd like to see, we're in an unfunded set aside program anyway. So you might as well get some dollars into the hands of producers.
I agree. I do agree with that. And it is better than what we are having to deal with in the hog industry, euthanizing some market ready hogs, rendering, bearing, disposing of, and that is we don't like to waste that the life of that animal. We don't like to waste the food. We don't like any of that when it happens, but it has happened, and it's something that the industry is dealing with, I think, and I think they're dealing with it well. And Jim, I know House Ag Committee Chairman Colin Peterson wants to find some way to compensate those that have had to euthanize some hogs. What's the status there? Any updates at all?
Indemnity payments will be changed to authorize USDA to make them chip in the phase four, measure coming up.
Okay. All right. So the CARES Act, and I think we're calling that like phase three. Now, phase four, Jim, when I read Pro Farmer's First Thing Today the other day, I think it was Tuesday morning, and you had some perspective in there on how it has been described by the Democrats as, number one, they've got a proposal that is, did they really describe it as partisan?
I don't know. Well, if they do, it probably won't be because this next early on, you'll have a Democratic proposal and then in the House, and you'll have a Republican proposal. Eventually, they're going to have to give at both ends.
Right. But they are going to bring a proposal that is massive and that, as I understand it, was described as partisan. Now, the other comment that I heard on it was that it is going to be as consequential as any farm bill in the past. That suggests to me long-term changes in an emergency program. Am I putting the right read on that?
I think you are too. Because Peterson signaled this, a week or so ago when he said never again does he want agriculture to get into emergency situation, especially in the meats area that you know we're into right now. So and I think that's a spot on statement. And so that's why this will be a mini farm bill. There's no doubt about it, Jim.
You know, I got an interesting point comparing both Canada and the U.S. here. So in the U.S., there's been more of the, you know, the ad hoc approach. And we're wondering, you know, what value does the farm bill have, or where is its position in the totem pole here? In Canada, the government's response has been, listen, we don't have a farm bill, so to speak, but we have business risk management programs in place. And the government has said, hey, listen, we have these BRM programs. Use those. They haven't gone the ad hoc approach. Farmers just as mad in both countries. But it's interesting the differences of approach in because could you imagine a situation in the U.S. for the last 3 years where the response from the government had been, listen, there's a farm bill. Got to help it. It's got to be the fix. Boy, would that be we would be in a way worse situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Pam, you were going to comment there on the next phase of the CARES Act.
Yeah, I think you hit it spot on. It's become farm policy debate in the CARES Act now. And I think I can't remember if that was what Colin Peterson brought up, is that
I think it was.
Yeah, that we need to really take a hard look at this. And we need to, because just as we've talked about, what is the best risk management program? And before the pandemic came, you know, we thought we were on track to something that really worked in a place where livestock markets, ethanol markets, and our export markets, and we got our money from the marketplace and not the government. Well, now when we need more government assistance, it really asks the questions about how are we going to come out of this with better policy, better disaster policy, better farm policy.
Yeah.
And Chip, if you look at if they do pump up the borrowing authority for CCC to the levels that we discussed earlier, think of the CCC at USDA, Commodity Credit Corporation, as a Federal Reserve that can step in at different times. And I don't think that's bad at all. We need a more flexible approach to aiding agriculture rather than waiting 3, 4, 5 years for a farm bill.
Oh, I can't wait for the president to be sending out tweets attacking the head of the Federal Reserve CCC on how he's managing those funds. That'll be great drama.
Yeah, it'd be like Axl Rose taking on Jay Powell.
I agree with Colin that there should be congressional coordination. When you get that much money into a CCC, I would not let it up to just one branch of government.
Well, here's something that scares me. As we talk about negotiating farm policy in an emergency situation like we're in right now, the common theme that has developed in the afternoon show on AgriTalk, not just this week, but even last week already it was starting, was, we've got some good planting conditions out there, and doggone it, maybe it does mean we're going to get all the way to 97 million acres of corn planted this year. And the bad thing is, we don't really need 97 million acres of corn planted for 2020. That continues to come out, and that continues to be a bottom line of industry analysts. What I'm concerned about is that conclusion is going to start to work its way into farm policy. And here we are once again talking 1990s, should there be a set-aside. I think that's going to be part of the conversation going forward. I hope not, but I think it will be. We'll wrap it up next.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on, for our family and yours.
I gotta know. You know, down here they make fun of me for being a Nickelback fan. What about up there in Hanna, Alberta, Canada?
Well, I'm only about a, you know, two-hour drive from Hanna, so there's a big sign there.
Do you know Chad?
I do not, but I have a cousin that knows him. So
get out of here.
Does that count?
Yes, that counts.
I have always wanted to drive to Hanna and take a selfie of myself in front of the sign and then send it to you. That is one of my things on my bucket list. I got to get done for you.
I'm going with you. I mean,
good. You guys can both use more gas.
It is still one of my all-time favorite Chip Flory moments is when you were interviewing a guest one time who was from Nanton, which is not far from Hanna, and you asked
Chris.
Him. Chris Cook, you asked him, do you know Nickelback? Like, it was like, oh, favorite moment.
This guy's one of the most inspirational people that you could ever get to know, talk to, meet, whatever. Chris Koch. And he's got his I Can campaign out there. I got that right, I think. Right, Sean?
Yeah.
I Can?
Yeah. I think so.
It's just a phenomenal story that Chris has gotten. We started off the interview with, you got to know the guys from Nickelback.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Welcome back. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. We got Sean Haney. We got Jim Wiesmeyer. We got Pam Johnson. Pam, at the start of the show, when you came on, you said that you are feeling more optimistic about the Phase 1 trade deal after the conversation that Mnuchin, Lighthizer had with their Chinese counterparts yesterday. Why? Why more optimistic?
Yeah, I am, because I think it showed, when we talked last week, it looked like Phase 1 was really in peril. Mm-hmm. And last week was really tough between that and the livestock industry news. And so hearing the news from those talks on both sides went well, and maybe, yes, we're going to make this work. Plus, there was, you know, announcement of corn sold to China, 27 million bushels. Yeah. And so I woke up this morning here reading that news and thinking it's all well and good. And then I hear maybe that a tweet went out, and it's like my little light shines and then a tweet comes out and it's snuffed out again for a while. So I'll let, you know, Jim give
what's
me an update.
What's the update, Jim?
Well, Trump was on Fox and Friends this morning, and he offered much less optimistic comments about China and the Phase 1, where he said he's still worried about it was basically the COVID thing again. But I agree with Pam on this one. You had the principals involved here, the trade officials, upbeat about the progress. And let's be frank, it's only the first quarter of a two-year program, so there is time to catch up on this one. And so I think in bottom line, it was more positive than negative.
I think China's going to China. Like, they're going to buy the commodities if they need them. They're an opportunistic buyer, and it is what it is. And
they bought 40,000 metric tons of U.S. pork in the last week of April.
Yeah.
That's a big buy.
Yeah.
And did you see the some U.S. consumers and reporters beginning to question while we're selling U.S. pork? That's going to raise its head.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, but that when we give them the shipment dates on these pork and they finally start to understand how the meat exports work, that should take some of the steam out of that reporting, I would think.
You would
hope. But anecdotally, you know, we always buy a beef and a pork at fair time. So our meat supply in our freezer is getting low. And so I went in and bought some more ground beef, and it was $5.99, and then my daughter-in-law is going to go in today and it's $6.99. So that's the viewpoint of the consumer hearing the news about animals being euthanized, and then the price at the grocery store keeps going up. So why wouldn't they be upset if they see we're selling product to China and I can't buy it here in the grocery store and I'm limited to how many packages of meat I can get? I mean, we got to put ourselves in their shoes.
Yeah, that is a tough line. It's tough to connect those dots there. It's tough to connect those dots on how that all comes together and works, and understanding, you know. And I'll say this again: the one thing that the mainstream media has been doing a generally good job of doing is explaining the bottleneck that is the slaughter side, the processing side. I feel like they've done a pretty decent job on the dairy products, the pork products, the beef products, but it is really difficult to see not just all time record high beef prices, but, you know, blow you away beef prices. 450-pound heavyweight choice graded box beef. It blows me away.
It was 213 the end of January.
Yeah.
It's now over 450.
Yeah.
Price is going up.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you've got some retailers out there that are committed to pre-COVID meat pricing. And it's astonishing to me that I don't know how long they're going to, that commitment is going to stay in place, but I know that there's some really good deals out there. A short loin for $9.99, whole ribeye for $6.99. I put that meat in my freezer this week. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Real quick, I can't believe we're going to run out of time. Jim, give me something hopeful for the week ahead.
Well, the markets, the financial markets are up, and we're having more and more businesses come back into play. Let's hope it's a, you know, cautionary principle for COVID, but I'm in a good mood on that.
Good deal. Pam, same question to you.
Yeah, I'm in a better mood thinking with transparency, so I know the truth, that packing plants are past the worst situation. The workers have better working conditions, and yep, this line is going to improve, and farmers are going to be able to move product.
Haney, 5 seconds.
Yep, more packer capacity coming online next week. Let's watch that.
Great job today, you guys. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Pro Farmers Jim Wiesmeyer, and Iowa Farmer Pam Johnson. You got to come back this afternoon, everybody. We've got Jared Creed from JC Marketing, and Monday morning, Chuck Grassley from Iowa.